Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, too. You can join us on the trumpet.com live link there also. Coming up on this Thursday edition, some pretty terrible violence in Chicago. Some details about what went on there. What are the best jobs in America? There's a list. The top 50, we'll just give you the top 5. We want to make the big bucks. The top 5 jobs, those are coming up. Also, how much land has the Obama administration taken? You might be surprised. That and more. Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm. Have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that, at kpcgfm. And if you'd like to email us, please do that as well, comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk with you here today, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondo as well. And a little cold outside today here in the local Edmond, Oklahoma City area. Does not affect Grant, as everyone knows. He is has no feeling when it comes to...
I'm impervious.
Impervious to a temperature of any sort. Abraham and I are feeling it. Abraham with the sweater.
Yes.
Myself with the scarf today. So just so the listeners know what's happening. It is a touch, you know, drafty, so...
Yeah, it's low high today. I think it's below 32.
The low high.
Yeah, so...
Threw me off on the yeah. It's not going to get real warm today. Some snow tomorrow, Friday. So maybe, I don't know how much. They say maybe an inch or something. But you have to understand, in Oklahoma, an inch is like a foot. So everyone's excited and on edge.
Yeah, it's like in Oklahoma, it seems like a snowflake is like a banana peel. Like as soon as you see it, people just start slipping all over the place for no reason. So.
You know what's funny about that? There's two things. Well, a few things that I did. Two in particular that come to mind as speaking of a banana peel. When I was a kid, you see certain things on cartoons, and then you think, well, I'm going to try that. I tried the banana peel thing. I threw it in the ground and stepped on it to see if I'd slip, and I didn't. And now you could, but you know, if you were to believe the cartoons, you drop that within 100 yards of somebody, and they're going to fall down.
Yeah,
I didn't. So I tried it, and I didn't fall down. The other thing I tried was a clothespin on the nose. You see that sometimes where they put a clothespin on their nose? That hurt incredibly bad. It was one of those old school wooden ones with like the mousetrap spring on it. That did not feel good.
Did it do the job, though?
Oh, it shut down the nose, that's for sure. But the pain was overwhelming. So I guess sometimes they say, you know, sometimes parents will say, well, you have to be careful about the cartoons and things because kids might actually try it. They might. I mean, I did.
Well, I'm just glad you're not throwing banana peels out the back of your car.
Right. So to throw the person chasing you, well, they can't stay with you because of the banana peels. Yeah, that doesn't happen too often. Some interesting stories today. This one was in the news update at the top of the hour. This is a terrible situation here. It's being reported everywhere. This report happens to come from Fox News. Facebook Live video shows disabled man. I think he's 18 or 19. He's a young guy. He was tied up and beaten as captors yell some pretty bad things about Donald Trump and white people. Won't say what they said because it's not appropriate. But so I don't know. This was reported last night. I saw it on the national news. Did you guys see the report? Just the headline. Well, they reported it last night, and there's a racial component to it because it was 4 black people that attacked this white guy. And it wasn't really talked about on the news last night. They just talked about it as a general sort of story. In the write-ups today, they're bringing out the race a little more. I mean, it's apparent. You can see it.
And they're saying it out loud. They're expressing hatred for white people. There's no guessing about it.
No, there's no guessing. And they are investigating it as maybe a hate crime and a few other things. But can you imagine if it was flipped, like what the outrage would be? People are outraged, but it is just interesting to see that it's not quite as... it's not being presented, I don't think, in the exact same way as some other stories we've seen, where they really focus on that racial aspect. I'm not saying they should necessarily, but it's just interesting to see the difference in the way the media reports these stories.
Yeah, I think especially, I mean, some other high-profile cases over the last few years involving race, most of them involved a death. So, of course, they were, especially of a young black man, the few that have happened or that sort of thing where they are much more high-profile, the whole nation gets involved. However, even though those are more tragic, you could say, they immediately had national media attention. The Big Six immediately were covering it. You also had lawsuits right away. You had protests, and you had many other things.
You had the administration sometimes jumping in. You had the president himself sometimes jumping in.
Yes.
Well, what about this? I mean, this is a horrible deal, too. Now, there's so much crime in the country. You can't very well say something every time, sadly. But this one was particularly shocking for a couple of reasons. One, it appears that this fellow was minding his own business. I don't know all the details. He has a mental handicap, so he's an easy target, and he should not be treated that way. Nobody should be, but especially him. And then they're yelling, you know, things about Donald Trump and white people. And they say on the video that they want it to go viral. They wanted people to see it. So, and it was streamed live on Facebook. That's a whole other issue. If you were on Facebook and you happen to know where to look, you could have watched this. Your kids could have watched this happen.
That's one of the many problems with that live recording or live streaming. And it really, you can find it on most platforms now. How do you really regulate that? How do you control what people put out there? That's the big problem.
Yeah, it's another component to it because you don't know what people will do. Chicago police on Thursday were considering filing hate crime charges. Yeah, I'd consider that too. After a mentally disabled white man was bound, duct taped, and tortured by four African Americans who yelled anti-Trump and racial slurs while broadcasting the heinous ordeal on Facebook Live, Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson told reporters Wednesday that two males and two females, including two women believed to have shot the video, were in custody, though no names or ages of the suspects were given. And they look like they're pretty young. It's horrible. You can't imagine anybody doing it, but two females, too. Usually there's more of a, they're more turned off by violence and that sort of thing, but they were right there in the mix videotaping this.
Yeah, I thought that maybe they would be protesting racism. Is that what they were trying to do? Because it seems like quite an ineffective way to do that when they're doing some of the most vile racist things you could imagine.
I don't know what they were doing, and it's interesting just to see this happen. The police chief here, he says, it makes you wonder what would make individuals treat somebody like that. He says, I've been a cop for 28 years. I've seen things that you shouldn't see, and it still amazes me how you still see things that you just shouldn't. He says it was sickening to see it. And like I mentioned before, the suspects can be heard saying that they want the video to go viral. Investigators said late Wednesday the victim was a classmate of one of the suspects, so in school together, I guess, whether currently or had been, I'm not sure, and added that he was held in an apartment for at least 24 hours, maybe 48. So they just kept this guy there. Johnson, that's the police guy there, he said, authorities currently don't believe the crime was politically motivated. Well, maybe not. I mean, maybe they were just trying to say things that were inflammatory to get attention. That's possible. But I've not seen that sort of restraint when it's been the other way. It's been an immediate, we know why this happened. We know every reason why this happened. Now, when it's the other way, they say, well, we're not sure why it all happened, which I think is a good policy, actually, to say, okay, well, let's investigate first. But that should be across the board for every crime, not just, you know, the ones that fit into whatever the some agendas might be.
Well, Mr. Trump is the incoming president of the United States. So if you're going to specifically call him out and say that you hate him, is that not politically motivated? It would seem that he is in the highest political office in the entire land, and yet they don't think it's politically motivated. That really is confusing.
Well, they came out and said, the authorities have said, well, we think these people are just being stupid.
True. That too.
True,
there
but
are just many things.
Yeah,
here.
But like you mentioned, how come that's not said on the other side? If there's a crime where it's white on black, how come they don't say, well, it's just stupid behavior as opposed to it's racially motivated, systematic racism, et cetera, et cetera? I think that's what's kind of interesting about this as well.
Yeah, I think this is disturbing on many levels, mostly because if these young people are trying to get attention, whether it's political, whether it's racial, whatever it might be, whatever they're trying to do, it's obviously not going to help their ideas. It's not going to help solve or kind of, I guess, disengage all the boiling hatred inside this nation anyway. This is just going to make things a lot worse. And I think by doing this, I mean, they're young people. They do stupid things. All teenagers do at some point. But at the same time, to plan this out and to have all this, it's definitely premeditated. They had some kind of plan and had some kind of goal along with it. Whether we don't know what that goal is yet. However, I think it's safe to say that it wasn't in the name of peace. You could say that.
Well, it certainly wasn't like a reactionary sort of thing where you get into a scuffle and a fight breaks out. This is planned, like you say. And it went on for 24 and maybe 48 hours. That's a long time to be doing something like that. And so it is really an interesting situation there. So more details coming out about that. I'm sure it's a horrible story. I hate to even bring it up, but I mean, it is what's going on in the country. And so that's a story you can see a lot about in different places. The other thing I think, too, is even if let's say they're not, it's not politically motivated or racially motivated in the sense that they've got some big agenda. Maybe they were just acting out. Where are they learning to say things like that? Like, where are they? Why would they do that? Well, what's the difference between that, what they're saying, and what you hear from a lot of the media outlets? That's where they got it from. They didn't make up the anti-Trump, the anti-white slurs on their own. They heard them somewhere. Where did they hear them? Well, maybe in the neighborhood. I don't know. But they certainly heard them on TV. I hear them on TV. So they're, if nothing else, they're just doing kind of what they hear. And I think the media sits there and goes, oh, it's shocking. Well, yeah, but you've been causing this type of attitude and this type of hatred towards other races by what you've been saying.
Right. And you mentioned how if the races were flipped in this scenario, the outcry would have been far greater than it is right now. But isn't every person a person? I mean, does it really matter what the surface color is? And yet we have people at CNN raising their hands, like hands up, don't shoot,
right,
on certain programs, and all kinds of just horribly racially motivated lies being pushed by the media. And now they're acting shocked when this happens.
Do they want to start another? Like you said, hands up, don't shoot. We could start one for this situation, and then everybody else could do it. It's the same sort of thing.
At least it would have actually happened.
Yeah, at least in this case, there would be maybe some reason for that. Anyway, horrible story, but some of the things going on there in Chicago, very violent city, much happening there. The economy has its ups and downs, I guess. This is a down. CNN.com, Macy's is closing 68 stores and cutting 10,000 jobs. We had a Macy's here in Quail Springs Mall just down the road, and that's closed. And then they put up, just like they covered the entryway because they're doing some construction, I guess. But the entryway is like I guess it's a screen print or something. It's a print of like what a store looks like you'd walk into, but it's just a wall. And it's never thrown me off that bad, but it almost has a time or two from like across. You look across, I'm like, hey, what's, oh, that's just a picture. You can't actually go in there. So that Macy's closed down. They're closing another 68, and 10,000 people are going to lose their jobs because they're just not making the money that they want to make at Macy's.
Yeah, I did see a story yesterday where a top White House official for President Obama said that over 90% of all the jobs President Obama has created in the last 4 years have been part-time, so that they don't have a long-term status.
Right.
And I think this kind of plays into that, where you have people working, but they're still not generating enough money to keep up with the demand of all these different stores. And that's a problem or a weakness with capitalism, is that when the demand goes down, you just can't maintain your reach, or especially these big companies, they can't maintain the vast size of their networks. And so they do have to downsize if people just don't have the same amount of consumable income to spend. And so I think that's really what we're seeing a lot of. And in Canada, before I moved down to the States, we saw a lot of this where several Canadian stores close out entirely because they just couldn't compete anymore. And a lot of people had to move on to other jobs and high unemployments or a lot of temp agencies, but a lot of temporary jobs, nothing really permanent took shape.
It's interesting when you look at the numbers here. They said Macy's expects to lay off about 3,900 workers as a result of the store closures and 6,200 from the management side. How many manage? You got twice the management. Now, there may be a lot more employees, I'm sure, on the ground level, not management, but the job releases are going to affect the management more. And those would be a better job in Macy's, you'd think. You'd be paid a little more and probably more of a full-time thing. So anyway, that affects some people there. And we lost our Macy's here. I think we still have one down at the other mall. I think. I haven't been in
Penn
there in a
while. Penn
Square. Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Macy's. I'm just not a big fan. I've walked through it and found myself confused and bewildered by their assortment of things.
I'm not sure the last time I've been in the Macy's. I have no recollection of what a Macy's is, actually.
Department store. You haven't been to one?
No, I've walked past it, but I don't think I've ever actually actively thought, oh, I'm going to go to Macy's and buy something.
Right. There's one. I think I went to the flagship one. I think that's in Manhattan. If that's not the flagship, it's certainly a big one. They have the Macy's Day or the Macy's Parade there all the time for Thanksgiving and things. Right. And that was kind of an interesting store. It was neat just because it multiple levels and it had escalators and it was like the old, like the sides were wooden escalators. So it was kind of neat, but again, I just think stores, if they don't change with the times and they don't keep up to date with things, I don't know how much this has to do with, say, the rise of what they call fast fashion, which is like H&M. And some of those stores where things are cheap, but they look okay. And I don't know that they're any worse than anything else, but you can buy it a lot cheaper. You're not going to go to Macy's and spend more if you can go there and buy it cheap, I think. I don't know if that's why, but that fast fashion has risen.
Yeah, I think online shopping, too, is killing a lot of these big stores with Amazon. Even my wife, when she wants to shop for dresses or bigger things that you would normally go to a department store for, she goes online because... more selection, you can get them fitted exactly the way you want them, and they ship to your door,
right.
And if you don't want it, you can just return it in the mail. It's just a lot easier, and there's less time-consuming, especially if you know what you want. So I think with a lot of specialty stores or department stores that have nicer grade clothes, I think they're losing out to Amazon.
Maybe more people would go if you could shop there like you shop at home, pajamas. Cup of coffee, just walk around. maybe that would get more people in the door. I don't know. But it's funny, you know, you see like these statistics, but most times I drive by the mall, it's packed out. You can barely find a parking spot. So I don't know what they're doing, where they're going, but not to Macy's.
Well, oftentimes before you can even get to those big department stores, you have to run the gauntlet down all of those little stands that are in the middle of the long hall, basically. And they're always trying to stop you. You know, if you make any second of direct eye contact with those people, they'll try to sell you something out there outside of the stores. I don't really think those are that popular, though, but maybe that snags some people.
Very rarely do I see people at those, and I'm always confused by it.
I don't know how they make enough money if no one stops.
Usually people that are working there at those little stands are just on their phones. Like, they're not even paying attention to, to the customers. And then you have the ones where they really pay attention. They try to flag you down, but... Yeah, I just wonder, how much are you getting paid to sit there and just, like, scroll through your phone? the one that would be kind of fun, actually, is where they sell, like, the little helicopters and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Because
you got to fly them around. But I'd be worried about crashing into somebody. I've thought about that before. Like, I don't think I could control that. I'd end up hitting a shopper and, like, getting sued.
Or if you crashed it into anything and broke it, you might have to buy it anyway, which would be a problem.
Yeah, those are, I guess, good jobs for the... teenagers, but as an adult, you probably wouldn't prefer to do that. Here's a list, though. This is a more positive list, I guess. Top five jobs in America right now, according to CNN Money. We'll start at number five, I guess, to build the suspense, all the way to number one. And these are some of them are interesting. Some of them are kind of boring, I think, for most people. Number five is an info assurance analyst. They say think of them as data superheroes. Well, that's exciting. Out to protect the security of an organization's hardware and software systems, information assurance analysts also assesses current systems and threats and spearhead the response to any breaches or attacks. The DNC should have got one of those guys.
Or a better one, at least.
Yeah. Make your password a little longer and add a special character. You get paid, the median pay is $98,900. why not kick it up to 99? Why are you holding out that $100 on us? Top pay is $127,000. 10-year job growth, 18%. So a lot of these, of course, are computer-based type jobs. Number four best job in America right now is a product analyst. This one would be kind of fun, actually. They say, love the feel of your new iPhone 7 or how easy it is to book a hotel on Orbitz. Thank a product analyst whose job it is to research how the company can improve its products and make the customer experience better. They're also responsible for deciding which new products to launch next. That would be a fun job. If you're good at it, what do you think of this new phone? What do you think of this website?
A lot of free samples.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'd say, well, if you let me keep it, I'd probably like it better.
I feel like this is what I do with my wife's cooking.
You're a product analyst?
Yeah, analyze them. Like, well, like, make more of this in the future, less of that.
Let's not release those cookies yet. Yeah. I don't feel like we've... median pay is $74,900. Top pay is $102,000. 10-year job growth, 19%. So some of these, you know, I think, how do you get into that? Yes, I want to be a product analyst. Well, don't we all? Like, we all have opinions. I guess you just have to have, you'd have to have good opinions that match the majority of people.
There are some people who do that in their spare time, just for a few hours here and there. Because if you go to a restaurant kind of as an undercover analyst, or what do you call that?
Secret eater?
A reviewer. Yeah. you can actually get paid to go to the restaurant and then paid on top of that.
Yeah.
For yourself.
We used to actually do that. We, my wife and I, early when we were in our early married years, we somebody that we knew, they used to go to one of the theaters once a month, and you could watch a movie for free and just review the theater. And then we started doing it, and it was kind of neat, but it kind of got to be a hassle after a while. You're like, I don't want to fill out all the. I made her do it, so I just sat there like, yeah, fill out that paperwork.
<That's>
but it's neat. I mean, there are places like that you can do those things. Number three, I didn't even know what this one was. Landman. It's not like a pool boy.
Landman.
Sounds like a superhero.
The adult version of the pool boy. It's the landman. No, this is...
Opposite of Aquaman.
Yeah. That's right. They say, imagine knocking on someone's door and offering them a brand new stream of income that will last decades into the future. That's one of the perks of the job for the landman, who serve as a liaison between energy companies, people who own mineral rights to the properties the companies would like to access, and the government agencies. So you work between the parties, say, hey, we want to get the oil out of the ground, we'll give you this money, and blah, blah, blah. Everybody's happy. That's a great job.
And my uncle was one, actually.
Oh, really?
In Canada. He's passed away since, but he was the liaison between a big energy provider in Alberta and the certain Indian tribes who owned where the dam was that created the hydroelectric power. He was liaison between the tribes and the Alberta government.
That's cool. You can make $93,600 median pay, top pay $161,000, and 7% 10-year job growth. So, again, that'd be a pretty good job. Number two, risk management director. Basically, they say if a hurricane knocks out a warehouse or a distribution center or something like that, risk management director jumps into action, directing cleanup and rebuilding efforts and filing the necessary insurance claims. $131,000 up to $200,000. And number one, the top job in America is actually working here.
yes, it is.
Not according to their list. Mobile app developer. Median pay, $97,100. Top pay, $133,000. 10-year job growth, 19%. So I think we all know what those guys do. And ladies. It's pretty obvious. Lots of people like the mobile apps. There's a lot of them. Some are successful, some are not.
Yeah, actually I have a couple friends who are... going to start developing some new game apps, and they're going to launch them at some point and see if they can get them to be popular.
Yeah, that's the trick. Can you get them to be popular? I mean, you go on any service, iTunes would be the big one, or you know the Google Play Store, things like that. Boy, you know, there's apps every which way, and a lot of free ones, and they're all pretty decent depending on what you want. So, finding the Pokemon Go, finding that magical recipe that you can do well.
The Candy Crush. Some of those games, it's hard to tell why they're so popular. I never understood the Candy Crush phase.
There was a guy one time that I'd worked with a little bit, and anytime there was a little downtime in between what we were working on, he was on his phone all the time. And I thought, oh, that guy's really busy. Like, he's multitasking, and he's, you know, sending emails, whatever. He was playing Candy Crush.
Angry Birds is actually fun.
And Angry Birds, yeah.
Candy Crush, I don't know, not so much.
All kinds of games out there. Of course, this one's happening. This is a good one. This is a really great story. If you're a Kentucky Fried Chicken fan, this will help that. And if you don't like them, you might change your opinion. A North Carolina KFC accepts customer's coupon from 1986. Guy walks in with a coupon from 30 years ago, and they accept it.
For like 10-cent chicken?
Not quite, but not far from it. In 1986, Paul Boyd received a coupon at a Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant in Marion, North Carolina. The eatery has since been converted into a pizza place. But the voucher established Boyd as a member of the Tuesday Special Club, a deal that allows any coupon holder to get a three-piece meal on any Tuesday for just $2.59.
Wow.
So that was before your guys' time. I was a youngin', but I was alive at that time. I am not part of the Tuesday Special Club. Many people routinely purge their pockets, but Boyd kept the coupon in his wallet for the next three decades. And he kept the same wallet, I guess. He says, it's been kind of a conversation piece since then. My wife says I never throw anything away. And so recently, Boyd, who is a local pastor in the area, located the coupon in his wallet and took note of the December 31st, 1986 expiration date. He says, I just saw the date and I thought it was neat. 30 years ago, KFC was the only show in town. I thought about how much different Marion looked 30 years ago. So he decided to try his luck at a new KFC under construction and presented his weathered coupon to the store manager. Decades may have passed, but the Colonel's hospitality apparently remains intact, and the store decided to honor the discounted meal. We're always going to honor any KFC coupon that comes across our path, according to the assistant manager. Boyd paid just $2.59 for a three-piece chicken meal, which would have cost him $8.53 today. Bargain basement on Tuesday.
Well, I'm going home immediately and putting all my coupons in like a safe and keeping them, opening them in 30 years and see what I can get.
Yeah, man. Imagine if you had one from, even further back. It would have been even cheaper. That's what you need to get.
Coupon for an iPhone 7 from 1986.
Yeah, for the future.
That's a lucrative business. Coupon forger from like the 1800s.
He said they said they'd honor any KFC coupon. Can we make our own?
Exactly.
I'm part of the Monday Special Club. It was like a cent for like whatever I wanted. I don't know. Found it in my wallet.
No big deal.
Looks like it was written in crayons. Well, different times back then.
You know, the colonel couldn't write when he was fighting the Civil War, all that stuff.
Yeah. Maybe you could try to present a word of mouth coupon. Well, the colonel told me free chicken, so I don't know. Do you know the
underground menu?
Yeah, what's the underground menu? So anyway, that's kind of a neat story. I imagine the KFC figures there's not a lot of people with 1986 coupons. I bet they took it from them. Thank you. we'll keep that one for now. But anyway, kind of interesting. A lot of people like to clip coupons, and it can save you some money sometimes.
Yeah, it seems like they're not as big as they used to. I remember growing up, we'd always use them a lot. Maybe I'm just not as thrifty as my parents were, but yep. Seems like they're just either it's just all online, I guess, or there just isn't as much coupons, especially for food places, as there used to be.
Seems like a stigma sometimes against using coupons, because usually when you see someone using coupons, they're using 200 at once at a grocery store and holding up the line for 45 minutes. And so everyone else is like, wow, I don't want to ever be that person.
Exactly.
Even if you're only using one or two, you still feel like you're acting the same way as that hoarder.
Yeah, it is a bit of a stereotype, like you say. You don't want to be the person to pull out all the
but
coupons.
Those people save so much money. I mean, and they have pretty much a garage full of whatever they want.
You know, it's interesting, speaking of prices changing, I think I saw a story last night, I want to say it's in Pennsylvania, but I could be off on that. They are instituting this tax on sugary drinks, and it's substantial. I think it was like a six-pack of Gatorade went from whatever the cost was to about $8.
Wow.
Like, I mean, it jumped easily $3, $4 for the sugar tax. And so they went to one store, and it's confusing because you look at the price tag on the shelf, and it has like a price, and then there's a price under it that's a little less. So it looks kind of like, oh, they discounted it. No, they're saying that's what you add to the price.
Wow.
It's like $2, $3. I forget what exactly it is, but they tax you per ounce, I believe. So whatever the ounces are, obviously you got to add that up, and it is a substantial tax. So that might cut down on people buying some of those drinks.
Yeah, that's un-American just to tax like that.
Well, people just buy something else.
Hurts business. Yeah,
yeah, it's going to hurt the grocery stores. Hurt everybody. I don't know.
Maybe we'll have the Gatorade Tea Party. Yes. To protest the spike on the taxes.
Dump it all into the aisle. No taxation without representation. Keia David program's coming away here on KPCG in a little bit, and also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Richard Palmer today from Edstone, England, talking about what's happening in Europe and in Germany. A lot going on there. It's going to be a very interesting 2017. He's got a lot of good insight information. Of course, they're right over there, not too far away in the UK. So make sure you listen for that. And if you can't catch it live, the archives are online at kpcg.fm. You can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. Also email us comments at kpcg.fm. This is Trumpet Radio Live. I'm Dwight Falk, along with Grant Turgeon and Abraham Blondeau. Abraham, you have a Twitter poll for us. The other day we talked about Mein Kampf. It's selling out. It's a bestseller in Germany. They're publishing it again. And so we have a poll about that. What's the poll question and the results?
Yes, yeah. So after we covered that story a couple of days ago, I just want to follow up and see what other people thought. And
before you tell me, it just occurred to me the poll should have the options should have been in German. Like, right. do you want this to be published? Nein. Schnell, which I think means faster. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
With exclamation points.
I should have.
Next time.
Yeah, next time. I should have put something German there for like cabbage and see if people voted for that.
Wie viel kostet das? What does it cost?
Oh, impressive.
The question was, do you think that Mein Kampf should continue to be reproduced in Germany? Because that is the question everyone's asking since it is so popular. And I had four different possible options. The top one was yes, to educate the future. Yes, it is irrelevant now. It doesn't matter, so we can read it again. The third one, no, it is disrespectful. And four, no, it is dangerous. And we had close to 100 people vote on it so far. And the top response is 53% think that, yes, it should be printed so we can educate the future.
That surprises me.
Yeah, I agree with this. I think my only stipulation is that it should be given to schools to educate people about Mein Kampf, not necessarily free for distribution everywhere. But I think you do need to tell people about it so they're not in ignorance, or it doesn't become some kind of taboo that people become interested in. But I think there's a better way to do it than they are now. The second highest one, 34%, thought no, it is dangerous. So that's the second highest response. 10% thought it was irrelevant, and 3% thought it was disrespectful. So sorry to the 3% there. But yeah, I was a little surprised as well, because especially with an American audience voting on it through my Twitter, most thought they should do it for education.
Well, I don't think they're going to use it for that reason. Or, you know, what kind of an education would it be? It's just full of a lot of bad ideas. I think they're better not being around. I think you can still talk about what he said, you know, and show the history of it without having to read the words of a madman exactly. But anyway, different opinions on that. That is surprising. I thought more people would be against it. But yeah.
Yeah, it must just maybe just hit a certain group of people as well. But yeah, it's not closed yet, so we'll see if it changes in the remaining time that's left.
You've got a story for us as well. This is from brookings.edu, going over to the Middle East there and looking at some of what's happening in that area. The title of the article is this: Is Oman Aligning with the Saudis on Iran? Of course, Oman is a strategic area there. It's just on the south of Saudi Arabia and important coastal region. So what they do is pretty important. What are they up to here with Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting take, because we don't really hear about Oman too much in the press or just in when we talk about strategy. And so just to start, as you mentioned, if people can picture Saudi Arabia, the peninsula, Oman is on the south of it. On the right side, you have Yemen, right beside Oman on the left side of it. Going beside Oman is the Straits of Hormuz, and right across that narrow channel is Iran. So, and Saudi Arabia is right across from Iran as well. So, Oman and Saudi Arabia are the closest two countries to Iran in that area in the Arabian Peninsula. And so they're very strategic because they share the Straits of Hormuz with Iran. So that Seagate has everything to do with Saudi Arabia, Oman, and Iran. And with this article, what they're pointing out is that Oman might finally be aligning more with the Saudis rather than Iran. So for most of their history, especially with their current leader, Oman has kind of been like a third party between Iran and the West. So Oman supported the Iranian nuclear deal. They're usually the third party middleman between the United States and Iran. They pass messages back and forth for them. And they've been neutral on many of these different proxy wars going on, including the one in Yemen, between the Houthis and the Saudi-backed government there. And so Oman's kind of been this third-party middleman negotiator, not really taking a side. But there is some evidence mounting that Oman is starting to become more aggressive, siding with Saudi Arabia against Iranian power grabs. And I think the main reason for this is because Iran has been expressing increasing their naval capacity and dominating the Straits of Hormuz. And I think as well, Oman realizes that if Iran can capture Yemen, which is on their left flank south of them, with the Houthis, then Oman's next. Before Iran could possibly try to take out Saudi Arabia, which is their main Sunni competitor in the region. So Oman's kind of on a chopping block between these two, the big Shiite power and the big Sunni power. They're caught in the middle. And I think they're finally being forced to take a side. And it seems like they're siding more with the Saudis.
Yeah, and as we've seen with some Middle East nations, they do have to sort of start to look for other alliances because the United States is no longer in the region as a power player or as a player that you would know what they're going to do, at least under the current administration. So we see Israel kind of, okay, we've got to go find another friend, another ally. And Saudi Arabia, they're probably in a similar boat. You know, they need a strong, powerful ally to battle against Iran and what they're doing. And so it's interesting to see it all shifting. And there's a lot of write-ups on thetrumpet.com about that. Been writing about that for years, that there's going to be some shifts there. And, of course, Germany then gets into the mix a lot.
Yeah, this is what's most exciting, is that we're starting to see these two blocks develop exactly as the Bible prophesied, that there would be a Europe-backed Sunni alliance. The Bible doesn't say Sunni, but we can see it's mainly Sunni nations aligning with Europe against Iranian Shia alliance backed mainly by Russia. So even though it's Middle East, you can still see Europe and Russia behind, in the shadows behind these two alliances. And I think the key here is that if Iran can get control of the Straits of Hormuz, and keep in mind the USS Eisenhower, the aircraft carrier, just left to go back to Norfolk. So there is no U.S. carrier group in the Straits of Hormuz right now in the Persian Gulf at all. And so in absence of that, I think Oman starts to realize that, well, Iran's just going to dominate us. And they're not really going to care about our interests if they get power. So we need to pick an ally. And I think with the U.S. gone for about a month, we might see Europe make a pretty dramatic move in the Middle East. I think because of Syria, the ceasefire breaking down there, and then also because of this strategic area in the Straits of Hormuz, I think very soon we might see Europe make a power move or something like that to try to just fill in this huge vacuum being left by the United States.
So we're supposed to go back in a month with, yeah.
Yes, the USS Herbert Walker Bush, I think it might be the George Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, the USS Bush, in any case,
yeah,
it will be there in about 30 days back in the Persian Gulf. But still, that's a dangerous window to leave open for Iran.
Yeah, and yeah, who knows? Maybe they don't go back. I mean, things can change. A lot is changing in those 30 days.
Well, Trump will be president by the time it goes back. So if he changes his mind, then...
Sure, if it's already out and he's like, well, we don't need to spend the money on that. I mean, who knows what will happen? Very likely they will go back, but what if they don't?
Yeah.
And it'll be really interesting to see what happens there. A lot of, like you say, I mean, you see Europe on one side, Germany in particular, Russia on the other side, and a little chessboard in between.
Exactly.
What pieces do you want? What pieces do the other side get? And very important geography with the waterways, especially. And so it can be very interesting to see what happens there. Yeah, you don't hear a lot about Oman on the news.
Yeah, that's what's interesting with the Middle East is we hear about these big powers, but actually, it's the small little countries you don't hear about that do make a big difference, especially around the waterways. Even in the Red Sea, you have Yemen and Eritrea and Somalia kind of block the Red Sea. And those are the ones that Iran have been targeting, and the U.S. has pretty much been ignoring them, at least in a big way. So it's interesting when you actually look down and look at just pure power politics and see what people really want. All the pleasantries and little fog goes out the window, and you can really see what people are up to.
It'd be a kind of a unnerving feeling to be in some of those nations where you know everybody wants your real estate. You don't have the strength to fight anybody off, and so you have to rely on allies, and you got to pick wisely. Because if you pick the wrong side and they abandon you or something doesn't work, you have retaliation coming from the other side. So those are interesting positions to be in. They have big neighbors on both sides, and everybody wants their piece of land.
Yeah, and there's a lot of history about, especially in Europe, in the Eastern Europe, where a lot of nations join the winning side. It seems like it's winning for a time. And then when they start losing, they have massive retribution, especially by the Russians against certain Balkan states who side with Germany. And same thing in Asia. You have some small states side with China and others, and when they lose, they get cleaned up.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to side with the side that you think is going to win, because otherwise you're going to have a hard time. Interesting story there, and you can read more about that. That's Brookings.edu. Is Oman aligning with the Saudis on Iran? Grant, you've got an interesting story for us. There's the expression that everything is bigger in Texas. Well, what if something's bigger than Texas? That's the question. MRCTV.org. Obama seized enough land and water in 8 years to cover Texas 3 times. That's a lot of land. Is he putting his new library on that?
I hope so. Hopefully it's something worthwhile.
Spectacular. My library is 3 times the size of Texas for all my accomplishments.
Yeah, it seems like it wasn't really necessary for him to take so much land and water, but he did. I mean, in 8 years, 3 times Texas is quite the accomplishment. That's more than 1.5 million acres just in the last week,
and that's
that he just took.
Oh, just and that's the federal government taking control of these lands.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, designating land for national monuments, which really what the effect of that is you close that land off for human inhabitants or for developing the land for resources. And it's pretty funny because some of these areas that he designated as national monuments, it seems like he only did it because the Indians claimed that the land was sacred. So then we have Master Obama telling everyone that they cannot use that land anymore.
So what areas of the country are we talking about? In the West mainly?
I believe it's about 80% of Nevada that is now owned by the federal government.
Wow.
65% of Utah. So it doesn't leave a whole lot of land left over for the states to own, or even especially for personal use.
And so it's just sitting there as sort of a vacant national park type, you know, where you can't do anything with it. I guess you could visit it. I mean, it just sits there. It seems like probably a kind of a waste.
Well, it definitely does.
Yeah.
But he has, you know, he has the agenda for trying to conserve the environment and trying to prevent too much industrialism. So if there is a lot of oil to be had on a certain amount of land, why not name it a national monument?
Has he been out to Nevada? I don't think there's a lot of Lots of preserve on a bunch of sand in it.
Yeah.
Except for Las Vegas.
Right.
That's only because they put the Hoover Dam there. Otherwise, that place couldn't be there either. It's pretty deserty out there. But that's interesting. So who had it before? I mean, was it publicly owned, privately owned?
Well, I would presume that it had to have been publicly owned, or maybe like ranchers, for example, have had land taken from them by the federal government in the last 8 years. So it could have been another situation like that. I haven't heard of anyone recently pointing guns at federal government officials and telling them not to take their land, but that has happened as well.
Right. That was Bundy. Was that his name?
Right. Cliven Bundy.
Yeah, that was the big deal back, a couple years ago, I guess. There has been quite a bit of a controversy about land usage out there because in that case, right, they were using public land or government land to graze their cattle or something to that effect, and then it was a confrontation over that. Yeah, that's interesting. That's a large size. Obviously, we all know how big Texas is. So if you consider that that amount of land, that's quite amazing. And it'd be interesting to see what they do with it. I mean, I suppose, well, with the new administration coming in, I guess they could do whatever they want with it, right? I mean, it's just locked down in some sort of, you know, legal situation where you can't touch it.
Once you designate something a national monument, I don't think it has ever been undone by a president to come after. Huh. So that... it does seem like it does get tied down in quite a lot of legal red tape. So why would he be doing it right now, right before he leaves office? Clearly something has to be going on here for him to tie Mr. Trump's hands even more. We know that Mr. Trump, of course, wants to expand domestic energy production. So if these lands out in the West have plenty of resources, name it a monument, and he can't really undo that hardly.
So is this sort of an executive order type of policy? I mean, did they just decide we're taking this land and that's how it's going to be and we named it a monument? Or because I didn't hear a lot of, I mean, I've heard a little bit about, hey, this happened, but I didn't hear a lot about it before that. You know, the public wasn't aware, or at least I wasn't aware very much of it.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know, is it just an executive action?
Probably an executive action, because those don't even have to really go through any legal processes at all. He can just sort of work in the background and have people do the dirty work for him. So pretty wily move here, and it does close off those areas to things like uranium mining, oil drilling, natural gas production. But again, Mr. Obama likes to have a legacy of conserving the environment. He has often talked about how he set up this area off the coast of Hawaii, basically conserved that area. But what was ignored was how he actually took $10 million out of the fishing industry there. Mm-hmm. He really hurt the fishing industry off of Hawaii because he wanted to conserve its coast somehow.
Yeah, I don't know what the motivations are there, if it is truly as it seems conservation, but I don't know about that. It just it feels like with a lot of the things that have happened over the years, there's always a different motive. Like you're not getting the full story on what's happening. So, but when it's this much land and water, it does, I think, raise a lot of eyebrows. Mm-hmm. What are you doing with all that stuff?
Well, I think it could be used to blackmail state governments too. If you own 80% of Nevada's land and they want some of it, well, you pass this law and we'll give you some of that land back.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. He's almost gone, so I don't know exactly. But I think the agency he's using to do this was the one created by Theodore Roosevelt, like Conservation of America, because he's the one who really started all that, making national parks, monuments, all that. But the point of the vision of that agency wasn't to steal land from Americans to make the economy grow or to steal resources away from the economy. It was that America was expanding so fast, and Teddy Roosevelt actually knew what he was doing. He was a professional conservationist. He wasn't just an intellectual. He actually knew exactly what he was doing. He did it because he had a lifestyle of, like, he liked to hunt. He liked to go out, so he wanted to preserve those places for our grandchildren. That was the point of it. I don't see any kind of noble idea behind what's going on right now.
Right. Yeah, and we all love some of those areas, beautiful national parks, and they're great. But But this is, like I say, you know, you go out to Nevada or somewhere, and there's some nice areas out there, but it's not like, you know, you're going to take a vacation to the wilderness of Nevada. We're not saving that for anything that I'm aware. Now, maybe I'll stand corrected on that, but, you know, it's not like the Grand Canyon or something like that. So interesting to see what the motives might be there. But, yeah, that's a lot of land that's been seized. You can read more about that at mrctv.org. Obama seized enough land and water in 8 years to cover Texas 3 times. Finally today, as you get older, sorry to say, the brain gets older too. And what happens is it begins to shrink. You have a small brain, a smaller brain. And that's what some of the decline is over the years. But they say the aging brain, though it is a shrinking brain, and a shrinking brain is, generally speaking, a brain whose performance and reaction time are declining, that's the reality of growing older. There are ways to combat that. This is from the Los Angeles Times. They say new research shows that brain shrinkage is less pronounced in older people whose diets are close to the traditional diet of the Mediterranean peoples. That's a popular diet, the Mediterranean diet. I think it's ranked number 2. They had a ranking of the top 10 diets. I didn't know what half of them were, but I have heard of the Mediterranean diet. Basically, it includes lots of fruits, vegetables, legumes. Could you point me to the legumes, please? Nuts and olive oil, little bit of red meat and poultry, and regular moderate consumption of fish and red wine. So I think most people have a pretty good idea what the Mediterranean diet is. It's supposed to help your brain.
Oh, that's picturing good news. Diets from the Mediterranean restaurants. Are we not on the same page here at all? Like couscous and hummus and everything?
I think that might tie in somewhat. Okay. But I'm not sure how closely Mediterranean restaurants relate to the Mediterranean diet, but basically they gave you kind of the outline there. Lots of fruits, vegetables, nuts, a lot of oil, fish. There's a lot of good oils in healthy, you know, in good fish, clean fish, omega-3s and all that. It's good for your brain. They always tell you, mm-hmm. you know, that stuff's good for your brain. So there's good oils and bad oils, like anything.
Yeah, and red wine's really good mm-hmm. for relaxing or for, I think, even just breathing better.
Yeah. Yeah, there are benefits to it in moderation. In moderation.
Yes.
You don't want too much of that. But anyway, they did have a list of the top, I think it was 10 diets. And it was. I kind of looked at them, and they didn't explain a lot of them, and I wasn't sure what they are. There is some that get pretty extreme. You know, you can... Yeah, you can lose weight or whatever you want to do, but sometimes it's, you know, if you're getting away from a balanced diet, it's just not good for you.
Yeah, losing weight doesn't mean you're healthy. Losing weight can mean your body's slowly deteriorating.
Right, that's true.
And it's losing some things it needs. But yeah, I remember the Atkins diet.
Yeah.
When that was popular, you just eat meat and carbs. And I think he died pretty young.
Yeah.
Because he stuck to his own diet.
Yeah, and it does. I mean, you're not eating the carbs, and so because of that, you don't have the weight in a lot of cases, but you're missing the fruits and vegetables and those things that you do need as well. They should have just called it the football diet. Yeah. You watching football? What do you want to eat? Man, some sort of meat. That's kind of it, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
For the most part. Of course, if you're there with your wife or your girlfriend or whatever, and or a group of friends with ladies involved, they'll try to bring the like vegetable platter. But it gets ignored. It's just in the way as we've got to part the vegetables to get to the wings.
Yeah, I think vegetables have the highest life expectancy of all the fruit or of all the food because it's always Passover for everything else.
It's good. I mean, a lot of it depends on the way it's prepared too. I mean, you know, when I was single, I remember trying to make a salad and I didn't know what I was doing. I just put the stuff in a bowl and looked at it, and I was like, I hate that. but I do like salads if they're done well. I just didn't know how to do it.
Yeah, I would just
still
eat,
don't.
I would just eat spinach, like baby spinach leaves.
Like Popeye?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the same effect on me, sadly. But I did always crave olive oil after I ate spinach, though. Maybe there's something to that. But, yes, that was my Sal experience as a single.
Yeah. Well, there you go. What about you? Nothing. Grant,
like,
shakes his
head. You use like a celery as a conduit for some sort of
right.
Nice nacho cheese or something.
Yeah. Make a, yeah. So, like it's like pouring cement out of the back of a mixer.
Yeah.
The celery stick.
Yeah.
Just pour that cheese directly into my mouth here. So you have to get creative sometimes in your in your single days, I guess, if you're a fella in particular. So anyway, if, it's good for your brain, the Mediterranean diet, they say. Good fish, good oils, those types of things. That'll do it for us on today's edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us, myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turch, and Abraham Blondo. Have a great rest of your day. Kia David, Trumpet Daily Radio Show are coming up. Listening to 101.3 KPCG online, kpcg.fm.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.